Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On November 23rd, the Trump administration, well, specifically 13 federal agencies working in coordination, part of the Trump administration, released its fourth national climate assessment. Now, that assessment is a detailed document featuring the conclusions of more than 300 scientists. Chief among those conclusions, to put it simply, the planet is getting warmer. Human activity is contributing to that warming, and we may be approaching a point of no return in terms of the damage to the climate, the change to the climate. The report found that climate change will cost the U.S. hundreds of billions of dollars every year, also damage to health. This hour, though, we're going to put, well, that, many aspects of this report on the side, certainly put the politics mostly to the side, the politics of climate science, to deal with a reality of climate change here in the Midwest, specifically how the agricultural community is dealing with it now and what plans are being made for the future. We'd like to have your input this hour. Are you a farmer? Is your livelihood somehow connected with the ag community? We'd like to hear your view. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us in our AIM studio, Gene Tockley returns to the program, professor of agronomy at Iowa State University, also a contributor to this report that I just mentioned. Professor Tockley, Gene, welcome to the program.
Thanks for inviting me, Ben.
You are one of the main voices behind the chapter on the Midwest in this fourth National Climate Assessment. I gave a very brief sort of summary of it. Tell us in a little bit more detail, what is already happening? What will happen in the future?
We're already experiencing the effects of climate change here in the Midwest. Particularly notable are two factors. One is the rise in humidity, and associated with that is the increase in rainfall events, especially extreme rainfall events in the April, May, June period.
Mm-hmm. So we can tie those directly to a changing climate?
Yes, it's very clear that these are well above the averages of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what are the implications? Higher humidity, precipitation, these rainfall events that we haven't really seen very much in the past.
On the rising humidity, we're seeing more pests, agricultural pests, horticultural pests, more dew periods are extended, more mold in our basements, and of course the increase in humidity is responsible for our increase in rain events. So in the and the impacts of these extreme rain events are that we're being challenged in agriculture to get the crop in the spring. We have narrower windows between rain events, and the rain events are more intense, so it takes longer to dry out the soil and be able to get the crop in. And in the fall, we have more, as we saw this year, we're having more rain interfering with the harvest end of the crop season, and that's also having a negative impact.
Mm-hmm. Gene Tockley is with us, agronomist at Iowa State University. Join us with your views. If you're in the ag community, 1-866-780-9100. I want to welcome a couple of other guests that will be with us for the entire hour. Mitchell Hora is with us in our Iowa City studio. Hi, Mitchell.
How are we doing?
Doing pretty good. Owner of Continuum Ag and Senior Management. Broadly speaking, you're a soil health consultant. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. So what do you do? Who are your clients?
Yeah. So I'm based out of Washington. So just a little way south of
Washington, here, Iowa.
Washington, Iowa. And I farm as well with my dad there and have a farm myself. So, but in my day job, I suppose you could say, started a consulting company about 3.5 years ago now almost while I was still a student at Iowa State. And I work with farmers. I work with ag input companies. I work with other consultants from all over the world to help us to put some data behind our soil, to assess the soil better and more thoroughly and look at the biology in the soil, look at the carbon in the soil, look at the nutrients, just more in depth than what we've been able to do before, helping those farmers to fine-tune nutrient applications, fine-tune management decisions, and treat their soil just better. And overall, my view of the soil is that the soil is a living, dynamic continuum. And I think we've been viewing the soil as a static, dead growing medium for a long time.
All right.
And we've obviously had some issues because of that.
Okay. So, Mitchell, you have a unique perspective. Not only do you know all the ins and outs of the health of our soil, what makes it healthy or unhealthy, but you are a farmer yourself. You near Washington, in Washington County, and you work with a lot of other farmers. So you've got your finger on the pulse, I would think. What is your reaction when you hear Gene Tockley summarize the impact already for the Midwest? Does that match up with what you're sensing on your farm and hearing from the farmers you're working with?
I think the biggest thing overall for me and why I wanted to come on and you know, have this conversation here today is no matter what is going to happen with weather, whatever, as a farmer, the weather is the biggest variable every year. And that's going to determine success or failure a lot of the time. But for me, we focus on building the soil. And by building the soil, you can build resiliency. You can be more forgiving for those heavy rainfalls because we're building that soil and that water infiltration to get that water down in and not cause more erosion problems. We're able to hold water better for those periods where, you know, we might not get a rain for a couple of weeks. So just trying to build some of that resiliency, I think that's my overall takeaway.
So building resiliency with a changing climate in mind.
Right. Well, just I think it's just smart overall. You know, I think it's just smart for a farmer to build the soil, to put that carbon back into the soil. We know we've lost, as a farmer, we see that we've lost organic matter. We see that we can visually see some erosion. We can see some of those things, you know, that are impacting day to day. And we know that, okay, we've got to turn things around. We know we need to do things better. We know we need to be more efficient. We know we've got to make some more money. That the ag economy right now is really tough. So farmers are looking for better ways to keep some of that dollar in their pockets. So for me, it's like, okay, where can I save a little bit of money? Can I not till? Can I be more efficient with my nutrients? And that just turns out that that's better for the crop, it's better for our pocketbooks, and it's better for the environment.
When you look at the Fourth National Climate Assessment and its predictions for the Midwest, how are you planning for the future in your farm and with your clients in mind? What are you doing and planning for the future that you wouldn't have if we wouldn't have these, I guess, dire predictions of higher humidity, higher precipitation, these rainfall events that are incredible?
Yeah, I think it's super cool for me to come in and look, you know, and answer that question on what are we doing for the future, that some of the ground that we're farming has been in my family for well over 100 years. And we've got to take better care of it so that my descendants and whatnot can farm it for hundreds of years into the future. And in order to do that, we're implementing cover crops. We're not tilling the ground. We're being more efficient, trying to find better products as well that are have proven efficacy, but also better impact on soil health, which is soil biology and improving that organic carbon and whatnot. So we're trying to sequester that carbon out of the atmosphere and do our part there, you know, that we've been releasing CO2 into the atmosphere for multiple decades. We need to put it back.
Gene, as an agronomist, weigh in on that carbon. Help us understand from a layperson's point of view, carbon, how that fits into this changing climate picture and the carbon in the soil, the carbon in the air.
Mitchell's right. We do need to restore the carbon. We've lost about half the carbon from our Iowa soils through our agricultural processes, but we can build that back. And there are many ways to do that. Mitchell is certainly more versed on that than I. But it does help hold nutrients, hold moisture, and just provide better medium for crops to grow.
Also joining us, Greg Reinhardt joins us by phone. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Good to be here.
Good to have you join this conversation. Reinhardt's family farm in Boone. You grow a variety of what? Fruits, vegetables? These are sort of non-commodity products.
Well, we grow corn and soybeans, but we also have transitioned into vegetables. We had a large family, and to keep them busy, we go to farmers markets, and we sell from anywhere from asparagus to zucchini, a lot of sweet corn, green beans. And so we follow the season as it progresses from markets that pretty much are open from May till through October. So there's, 6 months of markets where you need to have different crops. And so we've adjusted our operation for that, too.
And this farm is, these hundreds of acres have been in your family for years.
Right. Well, we've expanded it. It was a 160-acre original farm, back 130 years ago. But we've expanded and just trying to survive, staying on the farm and not having to work on the farm.
So. Right. Okay, so you've been on the line listening to Gene Tockley, the agronomist from ISU, there, too, and the main thrust for the Midwest of this fourth national climate assessment. What are your thoughts when you hear that assessment about what's happening and what trends are likely to continue into the future?
Well, I've been farming over 40 years, and of course, I've seen cyclical cycles in the weather, and we've seen dry periods, we've seen wet periods. Last few years, I do agree we've had more rain events in the past, but I just heard Alan Taylor speak, and he goes by tree rings, and he says, we'll look at the tree rings over 600-year time period and see you have dry periods, you have wet periods, and you have cycles. So it'll be interesting to see if we're going to keep in this cycle. He's predicting even a drought in 2025, so. We'll see, but right now we have to adapt. We do the best we can to stay profitable. Tiling is important in the areas where you have a lot of water that doesn't drain. Mm-hmm. We see some more tiling going on in the area. But being adaptable and adjusting to be able to stay profitable, that's the secret.
Mm-hmm. What about Gene mentioned about humidity and precipitation being one of the big changes here? Higher humidity, more precipitation, the impacts, eroding soils, more pests, pathogens. Is that something that you are dealing with now more than you have in the past?
Well, I think we've always dealt with problems, different issues every year is different. I don't know if it's that much more. Maybe the last few years we've had, take this year. We had maybe 45, 50 inches of rain this year. Normally, that's a lot higher than normal. It takes 25 inches to grow a good corn crop. So we have more rain than we need in some areas. If we had sandy soil, 50 inches, you wouldn't have to do any irrigation. Our corn crops were very good this year where they didn't flood out, so we have to manage what Mother Nature throws at us every year. And we look at long-term trends as well, but I've seen it more change, from year to year. So I'm not saying he's wrong, but I'm not saying, just a two-year change in weather is what we're going to be finding out, for the next 10 years either.
Okay. Greg, stay with us. We're going to go to break for just a moment. Before we do, though, Gene Tockley, react to that. I'm hearing, at least hoping to characterize it correctly, a little bit of skepticism, or the jury's out. Maybe that's a way to it. Is the jury out, Gene Tockley?
Well, there are parts of our climate that have been very favorable. About 28% of the increase in yields in the past 30 years have been due to more favorable weather. So if we look at the near past, it's been good. The problem is, and we can talk about that later, is the increase in temperatures that are coming down the pike that are projected in the National Climate Assessment. And those are going to be very challenging to adapt to.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we return. Gene Tockley, a professor of agronomy at Iowa State University. Greg Reinhardt, he's of the Reinhardt's family farm in Boone, growing a variety of things on many hundreds of acres. Mitchell Hora, a soil health consultant, also a farmer in Washington County. We'd like to have you join our conversation. Tell us, what's been the impact of climate change? Are you planning for the future? 1-866-780-9100. Ben Kiefer back with more in just a moment.
There's a lot of women that's coming out, you know, and expressing themselves about what happened to them.
I really hope the Me Too movement is propelling us in that direction where assaulting people has consequences.
I think it's important that we listen to all of the women that are coming out and telling their stories and work on how we can engage them in a healing process.
The Me Too movement has led many people to share their experiences with sexual harassment and sexual assault. It has sparked conversations and controversy and maybe even change. I'm Charity Nebbe. Look for Unsettled, Mapping Me Too, a new podcast from Iowa Public Radio in the iTunes Store and on Google Play, or find it at iowapublicradio.org.
Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about climate change, specifically zeroing in on this fourth national climate assessment. Featured the conclusions of more than 300 scientists. The planet is getting warmer, human activity contributing to that warming, really sort of a warning of the devastating effects from climate change. Will cost the U.S. hundreds of billions of dollars, the damage to health. There's a lot of things you can dig down into as far as facets of this fourth national climate assessment put together by 13 federal agencies working in coordination from our government. Gene Tockley was one of the authors, one of those scientists. He's an agronomist at Iowa State University, joining us this hour from our Ames studio. Specifically, Gene's task was one of the big voices on the Midwest section of it. And we talked about some of the summaries there, what we can expect in the Midwest, pointing out humidity and precipitation, what we're likely to see here. Also with us this hour, Mitchell Hora, soil health consultant, owner of Continuum Ag and senior management, also a farmer in Washington County, Iowa. Greg Reinhardt joining us from the area in around Boone, Reinhardt's family farm. It's been in his family for a long time, growing corn, beans, but also some fruits and vegetables on those acres. Join us with your observation about the impact of climate change now and into the future if you're in the ag community, especially 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Gene, when we left off, you wanted to really dig down a little bit on the temperature change that we're likely to have. Of course, all weather aspects important to the ag community. Temperature may be top on the list.
That's right. We're seeing that, and it's a little hard to understand this because of the recent trends we've had in temperature. The maximum summer temperatures have actually gone down in the last 15 or 20 years. And that's because of we have the more moisture, more rainfall, more cloudiness, and it's sort of masked the underlying warming that's going on. But as we move toward the middle and of the current century, we're going to see some of these inherent warmings be unmasked, and our max daily temperatures are going to go up during the height of the growing season. Particularly if it comes during pollination period, we're going to be seeing 5-day heat waves, for instance, that will be above 100 degrees. Mm-hmm. And this is particularly detrimental during pollination because pollen isn't very viable above 100 degrees. So that's going to be a challenge. And also with the vegetative growth, vegetative growth is for corn is limited above when it gets above 100.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we could throw in this temperature assessment here that our freezes, our last frost of the spring is coming earlier and earlier, isn't it?
Yes, and that's been helpful, and farmers have adapted to that change in climate. That's due, again, to the global increases in temperature. And so farmers are planting longer season hybrids and harvesting larger crops because of it.
Mm-hmm. Are we seeing different crops? I have, just in my personal circle of friends, someone outside of Iowa City on an acreage that just with some foresight planted an orchard of peach trees, Iowa peach trees, thriving. That would have been unheard of a few years ago, Gene?
Probably so. I'm not an expert on horticultural crops, but it is true that we have fewer days below, say, minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit. So we have fewer limitations to such crops moving up from Missouri, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to our phones, 1-866-780-9100. If you're in the ag community, want to react to what you're hearing this hour from agronomist Gene Tockley and any of our other guests, Mitchell Hora and Greg Reinhardt, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Des Moines. Laura is in Des Moines. Hi, Laura.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I'm not a farmer, but I eat food, and I am a member of a CSA. I really respect and admire our farmers, especially here in Iowa. I'm originally from Georgia, so when you mentioned peaches, I was like, really? We're getting peaches now? So that does kind of lead into my comment, which is diversifying. You know, I moving here, I found out that we used to have wine. Wine used to be one of the number one crops that we exported in Iowa. With monoculture and all that happening in the 70s, it seems like all that switched. We kind of went to less diversification, and now we are kind of stuck in this place where we're dependent on weather, and we're also dependent on, you know, what's happening in China and around the world. For me, you can't separate the soil health and quality from climate change. I think it's pretty obvious, if we look at the last 10 years especially, that it is here. It's not something that's happening in a couple of years. Climate change is happening, and it's happening in a rate that is much more catastrophic, you know, than it was. So for me, you've got to talk about the future of climate change along with soil quality. And if we can diversify and, you know, grow nut trees, maybe, you know, raise rabbits, there's all kinds of things folks can do in the rural areas, especially where they have more horses than children sometimes, mm-hmm. to bring back the infrastructure by diversifying. And I would like to see that because I appreciate that and eat that.
Okay, Laura in Des Moines, formerly of Georgia. We appreciate your voice
Thank
there.
You.
So, Mitchell, comment on that. The diversification there, your view as a soil health consultant and with the trends that we're seeing.
Yeah, I think she had a really good point as far as needing to have some diversity there, and that definitely, especially as a state overall, you know, very much in a corn and soybean system, I think that's not overall going to change that dramatically. I think we're pretty darn good at growing corn and soybeans, but we do need to have some other stuff going for sure. On our farm, I've actually got to change my bio up here a little bit, that we're actually farming a little bit of wheat this year.
Wheat
farmers.
And to tell us, for those of us non-farmers, you got a big grin on your face.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Wheat is unusual in Iowa.
Wheat's a little unusual in Iowa. So what we're doing is we've been using a lot of cover crops. And most of the cover crop used in Iowa is cereal rye. But the problem for us this year, especially down in Washington County, has a lot of cover crops. And actually that rye seed was in short supply this year and was a little bit more expensive. So we said, okay, the cheaper option is wheat. They're going to react about the same. They're going to give us about the same benefits and the same coverage, and they're going to overwinter just fine. But I was like, Dad, why don't we harvest some of this wheat? Mm-hmm. We know that the seed is going to continue to be an issue as more and more cover crop acres continue to be implemented. So let's take matters into our own hands. Let's harvest some of this wheat. We're going to harvest like 10 or 12 acres, not a lot. But we're actually going to plant our soybeans into the growing wheat, and we're going to harvest the wheat over the top. There's a variety of farmers in Iowa and around the country and around the world who are doing this. It's kind of a relay cropping system.
Okay,
and we're going to harvest it and see what happens and maybe expand acres from there. We've got cover crop planted on pretty much every acre besides some trials, so we could do this at a larger scale if we wanted to.
And for those of us who are not farmers, remind us, what is the value of a cover crop?
I think as a soil health consultant, that's been a huge benefit for us is implementing a cover crop. We do a lot of work on covers. a lot of the most of the farmers that I'm working with are implementing cover crops, and we're working directly with Dr. Rick Haney to put some data behind that as well. We're seeing increases in organic carbon, which means we're bringing that carbon out of the atmosphere, putting it in the ground. We're improving biological activity, which helps us to recycle nutrients better, and that way we can be more efficient with the nutrients that we are applying to our farms. We can fine-tune a little bit more, use a little bit less synthetics, diversifying our operation and keeping something growing all the time. The biggest thing for me is we live in Iowa, some of the best soils in the world. Let's grow stuff.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to our phones. Gene, did you have anything in response to Laura and Des Moines as well?
One factor that we might look at is when we have years like 2012, where we had 2013, where we had 700,000 acres in northwest Iowa alone that was not of good soybean and corn acreage, was not planted to either corn or soybeans because they couldn't get in to plant. So come June 1st, you've got 700,000 acres that's looking for another crop. I think being poised and ready for these kind of situations could, in fact, lead to some diversification in when our conventional crops won't work.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to another caller. Joe is with us in Boone County. Hi, Joe. What's your angle on this? Are you in the ag community? Do you farm?
Well, I don't farm, but we garden. We grow a lot of our own food. And we try to, you know, it's a big trend in the country today. And we try to do it chemical-free, like most home gardeners do. But we've noticed a couple things. We've noticed a huge increase in the number of bugs, pests that survive the winter. The squash bugs, the cucumber beetle populations seem to be much bigger than they've been historically. And we're also seeing the result of these real heat waves where the green beans don't produce any seed. The cucumbers are bitter by the time they're 2 or 3 inches long. And we're dealing with a lot more fungal problems on the plants. So I'm thinking, you know, that the home gardener and, you know, and those of us that try to grow chemical-free, I really worry, you know, like my son hopefully will inherit the farm and continue to garden and support himself in that sort of sustainable way. But with all of the problems that global warming is bringing with it, I can see it's going to be a huge challenge for him down the road, much more so than it is for us today.
Joe, thanks for your call from Boone County. And in your short comment, you hit on a number of things that I know light up with Gene Tockley, our agronomist from ISU, because in reading his report as part of the Fourth National Climate Assessment on the Midwest, you really focused on some of the things that that Joe was talking about, right, Gene?
Yes, the humidity factor and the variety of pests is projected to increase because of this combination of favorable conditions for these kind of pests. And I think that moving forward, it's going to increase because the reason that we are getting this higher humidity, we know why that is very clearly. It's coming from this extra moisture is coming from the Gulf of Mexico, and that's a global issue that is going to increase.
Mm-hmm. What about the, he mentioned fungus and disease, Gene?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and some of these, as was mentioned, are overwintering better because we don't have these killing extreme cold temperatures like we did 50 years ago.
So the fungus and disease are surviving.
And some, yes, and insects are surviving in our soils over the winter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go back to our phones. Deborah is joining us from West Des Moines. Hi, Deborah. What are your thoughts?
Hi, how are you?
Doing fine. Coming up.
Well, it sounds like a couple of the other callers, while I was on hold, may have touched upon some of what I was going to say. But one of the things that seems to me, after decades of basically becoming a monoculture agriculture in Iowa with soybeans and corn and emphasis on commodities, if the climate change report is correct, many of the areas on both coasts that currently provide the food that we're buying in our grocery stores are going to be compromised as resources for that. And it seems to be a tremendous opportunity for Iowa farmers, including addressing the issues that your previous caller mentioned about fungus and other challenges. but it's also an opportunity for us to become really the breadbasket of the country again.
Okay. Interesting comment. What do you think of that, Gene, that other places will be less able to produce certain crops? Maybe Iowa will turn into a place for growing those crops?
Much of our early produce comes actually from southern Arizona. But the areas around Phoenix are in the future are projected to have in excess of 120 days per year on average above 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. So these are going to be pretty incapable of supporting the kind of agriculture that they do under irrigation now. Even irrigated crops cannot survive in these kind of conditions. And I haven't looked specifically at the Central Valley of California, but it's probably likely that that's going to be the same. So the caller is really right on that I think we should look for other alternatives, use the shoulder seasons better for some of these kinds of crops. And Iowa may have a bright future in diversified crops like this.
And Greg, going to Greg Reinhardt there in the Boone area, you said, Greg, on your acres there, you grow fruits and vegetables. So that's an interesting comment from Deborah in West Des Moines for you as well.
Yes, diversification has been key for our farm. We've also expanded and we've grown some sweet corn and English peas for a bird's eye company up in Minnesota where they've wanted to expand their production earlier. So we'll plant peas early as we can in the spring. And then they're harvested in the middle of June, and then we come back with a second crop of soybeans behind them. So we double crop, and so we diversify there with sweet corn production. A lot of the sweet corn is a shorter season crop. So once that's harvested, then we can get in cover crops early where we can really get a benefit on early seeded cover crops like oats and radishes and turnips. And I do agree cover crops are an important tool for farmers to use, and along with other conservation practices to keep our soils healthy, to keep as a good steward of the land, you know, and keep the sustainability for our farms over many years.
Greg, we're running short of time, but I wanted to ask you briefly, tell us what can be done to encourage conservation practices. For you as a working farmer, do you need incentives? What do you need that isn't there?
Well, incentives are always good. That's the best hook for farmers to try. They need to be educated more. I'd love to see more cover crops on ground. Every year is a little bit different. This fall was a challenging year just getting the crops out. So a lot of cover crops maybe didn't get planted up our way as much as the previous years. But education is good, seminars, and just having farmers learn more about the benefits of cover crops. You know, a lot of the experiments are still out on, you know, how profitable they are, but I think it's good for the soil. I think it's good for
Let me dive over to Gene. What about most farmers? Are we doing well in Greg Reinhardt's sort of category there? Are we implementing conservation efforts statewide, as far as you can tell, Gene Tockley?
There are some. However, I think adoption of cover crops is slow, but certainly needed. There are some good resources on the USDA website. If you just do a web search on USDA cover crops, you'll find a lot of suggestions. Climate Smart Agriculture is also being promoted by USDA that there are features there, and I think Greg is right that we need to be, or Mitchell's right that we need to be learning more about these and trying them. Widening out our grass waterways is another conservation practice that needs to be done to adapt to the current heavier rainfalls that we have.
Mm-hmm. Let's go quickly before we say goodbye to Aaron, also in the Boone area. In Boone, Aaron, are you in agriculture?
Yes, sir. I actually have a local mushroom cultivation business, and just wanted to make a point that, you know, looking at monocultures and traditional culture, I find it, you know, actually beneficial for me to have these extended summers and falls that have the high moisture and mimicking, you know, ideal fungal growth for me. You know, I have an indoor room, but I'm still pushing a lot of air from outside in. So my system doesn't have to work as hard. And I also, you know, foraging. I mean, it's been a wonderful year to find mushrooms.
Okay. Interesting comment. Aaron and Boone, a mushroom cultivator. Thank you for that comment. To finish up, a couple of loose ends to throw your way, Gene Tockley. We haven't talked about livestock. What is the impact on livestock production of these climate changes now and into the future? Quickly.
Some of the increases in temperature that we are going to experience are going to be challenges, even for indoor, confinement livestock. For instance, hogs, we're going to have to design ventilation systems and cooling systems that will be more adaptable to the in the future, because both breeding success and weight gain are adversely impacted by these higher temperatures that we're expecting.
Mm-hmm. And a few words to end on flooding, the expected changes. The report gives an example of a 100-year flood in the Cedar River Basin, I believe. It will become more flood. What will be the 100-year flood? What will that become over the next century?
In the large river basins, in a study we did for the DOT, it turns out that a 100-year flood of the past century will be a 25-year flood in the future. For smaller basins, not quite so much. We did the Skunk River, and we found that a 100-year flood of the past century will be a 40-year flood in the future. So we need to be designing our infrastructure to be adaptable to this so that we don't have to replace bridges every 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Adaptable, and also make some of our areas more porous so that what those rains in our urban areas especially can get through. Right?
That's correct.
And
yes.
Not just be dished off into our streams and rivers.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you very much. We've run out of time. I want to thank our guests, Gene Tockley, professor of agronomy at Iowa State University, contributor to the report that was just out in November, the fourth National Climate Assessment. Thanks for coming into the studio, Gene.
Thanks for inviting me.
Mitchell Hora, thank you very much. Owner of Continuum Ag and Senior Management, Soil Health Consultant. Thank you, Mitchell.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and look forward to continuing conversation.
All right, and Greg Reinhardt, thank you very much, of Reinhardt's Family Farm in Boone. We appreciate your perspective, Greg.
Thank you so much, Ben.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.